We actually presented some preliminaries on our ESA acceleration, which today is quite complete. Last year we already had most specification famous engineers in cars, meaning we were, last year was like, oh, we now have some devs. And GLXJS was running, so what's going on now? Well, the first thing is what we still keep this process, you know, we've got this process of trying to build a bigger and bigger community of developers who want to drive, and this, to me, that's very important. Well, as you see currently, there are only full-time people working on this, so to keep the ball rolling, we've got to involve new developers all the time because people come and go. So, well, we certainly try to make as much publicity for the project as possible, which means, of course, you might all know the TIMDC, which is a bi-weekly, somehow bi-weekly or every week or something. It's an update on the project and says, well, this last week has gone this and that. So it gets people, you know, actually seeing what happens other than by having to check out the Git code and try it and compile it. We got associated with some news sites in Reddit, which is one of them. We published an article on this thing, Make the News. Actually, it's currently available for subscribers. At the moment, we're still very focused on, you know, working through IRC, which is very convenient because it's extremely fast and it's not like email when everyone while chiming in a discussion to try to discuss maybe stuff in points and all. IRC, well, that has reached kind of a compromise quite quickly when it comes to technical decisions. So it's pretty convenient to use IRC. Since we're still very much in development driver, well, we've got an unspoken policy that broken code is better than no code at all, which we apply fully when we say we've got R1 commission support, and when we say we've got ESA support. It was not so well working as of 6 months ago, but through continuous testing and through user support, and actually things did not work as well as we expect, well, we were able to fix the bug. So I think it's a very important idea that broken code is better than not having code. So, moving on to the hardware primer. So I'm going to introduce the hardware features once again. I'm going to go into a little more detail to explain what actually justifies the choices we've been made in the design. So we're covering a 10-year time frame here. We say N4, which is 98. Then we're covering the N50 somehow, which is this year. So, if you put it in perspective, for example, look at the Radeon driver, it's pretty big for the Radeon that we have to handle all the hardware at the same time. So, we've got, well, most likely we're going to have the same issues of covering all this hardware. So, hopefully, there are some similarities between the cards and we can leverage some common code easily. But although there are some differences, in particular 3D handling, which I'm going to show after this slide, which incurs that we have to write the other pieces. So, the nice feat, we've got hardware context on the card, which means we're not going to bother with a lot of the architecture that's going to be written for other cards, which actually involves storing and restoring the context in states, which is pretty complex and has to be done in the DRM all the time, in real time, when we switch applications. In the NVIDIA case, we've got hardware-based context switching, so the card will actually expose a number of command buffers. Well, each command buffer gets a timestamp, just like round-robin scheduling, you have to do an operating system. And once the timestamp is up, well, now the context is switched on and the state is put on the card and you can execute it for a number of milliseconds. So it's quite simple in the basic way it works. One very nice feature. Yeah?
How many
conductors? It depends on the card. If you have an MV4, so the oldest one, you've got 8, so you've got 16 conductors. If you go MV10, you've got 32. If you go MV16, you've got 120.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not, because we'll keep one for the trouble, one for 2D acceleration, maybe. maybe one for XP base, and then one for 3D application, which means not so many. So yeah, 15 or 32 as much as we need. And even if we don't have enough, we still have this. We can actually ask the car to drop the context itself and put down another context. In fact, so we can control it by hand. Additional switch in the scene. At the moment, I'm putting it to very much in development. I don't know what it is. 15 jealous games at the same time in TNT. We're not hitting the limits here yet.
Yeah,
but it's true that the hardware can actually help you as well handle the context. The MV3, so we're not covering this car as in context. We're not covering this car unless someone says so we have it. But actually, the MV3 doesn't have to be classical comments, that's not a comment that we have to use. It's quite totally different because so, to sum up, how really this stuff happens?
Well, as far as Vertex and Cassie was concerned,
the old MV4, now, obviously, from MV10 you get fixed Vertex transform, so it used to be called TCR on the hotkey. They actually consider it not really flexible enough for extraordinary games and applications. And starting in MV20, you've got the first generation of Vertex programs here, which is available, which is very nice, because it's unified, so we can pretty much shoot the same code in those two cars as far as 3D and Vertex processor was concerned. On MV40, the Vertex processor was upgraded, and on MV50, it was actually merged. You've got the Vertex and Fragment processor in a single interface, which I expect. As far as texture combining and fragment program are concerned, it's a bit more complex over time because it goes very fast, and so the new APIs are evolving. So we've got a lot of generations, a lot of change between the generations. As far as video capabilities is concerned, we used to have a hardware overlay until the MV30 actually online. The very, very first MV40 cars still have the overlay, but no one's got this card. Most of the MV40 cars do not feed the hardware overlay. So we pretty much have to do video overlay by using, well, the 3D engine and fragment processing it as a continuum. And as far as dual head capabilities, it used to be extremely cost specific and vendor specific. Like the vendor would bolt his own converter and TMDS encoder, they can't have it. Say, hey, I've got a dual head design, but this is not native. But starting from MV17, actually, we've got a very nice, mostly unified dual head capabilities, which means these cars might not really get dual head, even if you see two of this problem. We're not really that much interested in doing all the very difficult stuff just to get there. But maybe Stuart will do it one day. It's pretty nice. So now, we're moving on to the reverse engineering part. So, the hot tool of the moment is called MMI or Trace. You might have heard about it. It originates from the Nuvo project that has now, I believe, a life of its own. What's the idea of this tool? Well, it's a tool that's aimed at tracing inside the kernel what happens. So you want to know what hardware registers touched by a binary driver in your Linux kernel, you can use this tool. As a quick introduction of how it works, well, it's very simple. You've got a trap called the IO remap tool, which basically is used to map the MMI space, but not just the space of the car. So we trap this code. Next, we just remove the page mapping from this area. So the next time the binary driver tries to access the area, it will trigger a page fault, as you expect in more architectures today. And we map the page, we step a single instruction, and then we remove the page again. And by stepping this single instruction, we can actually, before stepping the instruction, write down what registers were set, what was set, and what not. So in the end, we are able to produce traces of register offsets of any binary driver that is used in the Linux kernel. So you can imagine that this project got a very wider scope than many hardware specific tools. And yes, it's getting used because it's a mad Wi-Fi, so mad Wi-Fi guys, they have, you know, a binary piece in their Wi-Fi driver, and they are working on reverse engineering it, and they use this tool as well. Sadly, it got broken in 2.6.24 kernels, but that's because we used a hook that was not really widely used by anything else than this tool and the kernel debugger. The kernel debugger was quite new, and we didn't really follow the Linux kernel manually. But we're not aiming for mainline kerneling inclusion because that basically ensures that this bug will not happen again. This also ensures that next time we want to reverse engineer a binary driver, every single user will be able to have it as a default in the distribution to have MMI a trace and do reverse engineering of a piece of hardware again. So I think spreading this tool is quite interesting for us, and that's why mainline inclusion is very important. So we might be aiming at 2.6.26, but don't take my word. Next, we've got Voltgrind MMT, which is a tool that tracks user space access to MMIO branches. So it works mostly the same as MMIO trace, but it's just in user space. Obviously, you can use it on an XOR, so you can actually reverse engineer any binary XOR user space driver. So we can do what we do in the code, we can do that in user space as well. Finally, Renuvo, which is the old dog. You might have heard about it. It's very basic. This is the tool that was released 2 years ago at first, and it just maps the FIFO. You know, the binary NVIDIA driver maps the FIFO inside your OpenGL application space. So this Renuvo is just an OpenGL application. It finds the FIFO. It looks, it sends a couple of OpenGL commands. It looks at the FIFO changes and says, yeah. So by setting this blending mode, you get this change in the FIFO. So it's as simple as that. If you repeat that for every single OpenGL functionality, well, you can pretty much reverse engineer the whole 3D pipeline yourself. So that's the idea. And obviously, it gets regular new tricks, which are updated OpenGL tests. So, moving on to 2D support. So where are we now? Well, we've got simple EXA acceleration for NF4 because of hardware limitations. We cannot really do much. We tried very hard, but it's enough. On NV50, it's also very simple, but that's because we lack hardware at the moment. I actually plan to change that, yes.
What do you mean by simple EXA?
Well, it accelerates the copy operation and the solid field operation and the uploads and downloads from memory. That's about it. So that's the level you get in Radeon for R300 chips or Radeon HD 5576. You get this level as well. Yes.
So then if the guy is only solid field copies and absolutely, I mean, why not just stick to
That's a good question. Very early on, we decided to ditch XAA because we looked at the two implementations at one time in the driver we had both, and we looked at the two pieces of code, and one was XAA, and it was pretty big, it was pretty complex, and what was EXA, it was very small. So, of course, we get a lower performance, but we expect in the future to have two core EXA. But this is, you're right, this is a bet on the future. We're not interested in the past. We're not directly willing to do some releases in other releases. We just want to do something about, yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah,
we didn't really want to, you know, involve development time to something that would get thrown sooner or later anyway. Also, the nice thing about TXA is you can accelerate X render API. So
yeah, but it's not in there yet. So you're not using it yet.
Yes, for all this we are actually doing.
Okay, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
We didn't want to have, you know, one path that would get fast for France or the other path. It's getting very complex to be back there. We try to take a simplistic approach, really. I think that's very important, especially when you're in for 10-year time range. So yeah, this card, they get pretty much all the operations you're going to need for your command desktop acceleration. Of course, as we were discussing, EXA is not yet up to speed for for example, the France prefix is not really as fast as we would hope. Hopefully this will be get soon, quite soon for EXA, but as far as implementing the hooks is concerned, we are implementing these hooks. So we also get a performance glitch from synchronous uploads and downloads, even though we've been lifting limitation layers for all this stuff, but we still get hit pretty hard on this. And this actually depends on doing a proper TTM with asynchronous transfers. So it's more of a long-term goal. So XV, we've had the vacation of code students involved in the Uber vacation, and you work in the XV layer. So we cannot say that we're faster than the binary driver as far as performance is concerned. That sounds cool, but I think, you know, the upload of a frame with the render is pretty expensive. Well, that has two stages together. It's pretty fancy. And we've got another adapter on NG30 for the card, which gets you a better filtering. So we've got this thing's not got. It doesn't have the better speed, but it's got a better top quality. So if you want to watch movies which involve high upscaling, it's pretty interesting as well. And yeah, it implements Matthias' last year of Toast and Talk. Basically, I just listened and then I sat down and did the transition from the slide forward. Very good. So another thing that's getting more and more important, and it was actually the reason Google started in the first place. I had begun, but it was 2.5 years ago or something. I had begun to write a JOS project to just execute the JOS. So we've got something, if you were there at the API talks, you know they've got this Payton JOS stuff. So we've got similar stuff with big JOS. So we had to implement an interpreter for this. Ours was actually based on its own booting application and from the VOS driver, which had also some main thing. And it sat for a long time and recently was revised by Stuart Hughes. It was found, we knew this from the beginning, but it was found that it was getting really, really needed for proper mode setting. Especially with all the word outputs you can find and all, it's really hiding a lot of the difficulties around the mode setting stuff. So this is a very welcome addition. Hopefully it will be able to cold boot the cards as well one day, not yet the case. But for example, people who do not want to have an x86 emulator in their x86 will be able to cold boot NVIDIA across with this. So we're thinking for our PC people, we're thinking Italian people. So R&R 1.2, so yeah, we support that mostly, as I said, on the cards which get nice dual end capabilities. As I said, the older one was more difficult. We've got dynamic reconfiguration as you would expect from R&R 1.2, and still there is the static frame buffer location issue, which means you have to pretty much put in your XOR configuration the maximum size you ever want to use. Even if you have a single screen, it has to be made for the whole session. But that's not a limitation on our side. Again, it's common architecture. You might have to work this out on your side. So now, moving on to the meat, the PD support. So, it's really hard to get.
Custom sauna. Custom sauna is.
So, the old DRI model, we had actually implemented an old DRI style driver, mostly from GLXJS. It was something like 25,000 lines. And it required 25,000 lines, which is a lot of work inside the driver. Each driver actually has to implement most of the OpenGL pipeline itself, so drivers get the big things that could be factored in on apps. So it was totally suboptimal. So we've got, from thanks to Graphics, this really nice architecture, which is called Gelio, which actually puts as much in command as possible into an intermediate task. So you can pretty much have whatever Graphics API you get, and you can have very simple drivers. So for a point of comparison, we used to have these 25,000 line DRI old school drivers, and now we've got a 4,000 line NV40 driver, which is working as well and far better than the DRI1. And for, as far as NV10 is concerned, at the start of implementation, it should be pretty complete, but doesn't work yet. Because the card is much simpler, the implementation is 2,000 lines. So we've got a mostly working 3D driver in 2,000 lines, which is great as far as maintainability is concerned. This is new one. So you're probably going to ask, but if we use a shader representation, you know, in the middle of the pipeline, what about cards that do not have this shader? Well, it's spending work as well, because these cards will get some additional intermediate representation. So we've got just extending to all the cards, just as simple as adding additional instructions to the fragment and vertex program instruction set, which basically mimics the behavior of the old fixed pipeline. So you get basically passed down through the pipeline programs that are not real fragment programs, but simple things that describe these old OpenGL extensions, just using instructions. So this design can actually extend to support these old cards as well, and this is work that I'm doing at the moment. And I hope to have an NV10 driver soon and be able to show this out, because I think this is still important to support older cards, and Gallium, in my opinion, is too important to be kept for fragment shader supporting only cards. So I think it's very important to extend it to older cards as well. So our current Gallium development, the NV40 driver is somehow working. We'll have Stuart demoing afterwards, I think. Yeah, you're in for a demo. You're gonna demo?
Yes.
One of them, actually two of them are gonna demo. The NV10 and NV30 driver are under development. If you're watching the gate, you can see that I imported the NV30 driver like 1 week ago, and I've not yet imported the NV10 driver. So, what does the future hold? Well, a big one, the ETM. This is more than memory management. If it was just internal memory management, well, we would just be able to replace our API and say, well, we already have our own memory manager, so we could just switch with the TTM. But it's not as simple as that, because it will manage memory, but it's also going to move the memory as other application requires. So if now something the application uses in video memory is moving, well, the application has to know somehow, so there's some work involved. It's not really possible to have the application really know, so the solution is another one. It's that the application passes its common buffers to the kernel and tells the kernel where the offsets actually live. And the kernel will do what we call relocating, or offset fixer. It will override the offsets with the proper offsets for each resource. So, since the kernel knows, it has to do the work. There is, to achieve this, there is something called super IOCTL. It's not that super in our case. Other drivers do a lot more than we do in this. But we're going to have this as well, so we're going to have to implement this. So CTM is not really easy, especially since the zero user space has to notice the kernel that in the command buffer, so you've got a big command buffer, it has to say there, 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 and there, you have offsets which need to be fixed, obviously, by the kernel, because you're the only one who knows where one piece of memory is at one given time. So this is the job of a super army CTO, among other things, of course, but in our case, this is mostly the job.
Well, the DRI 2 is still very much in the air, because for us, I mean, not in general, it's been pushed, but for us, it's still very much in the air. But hopefully, it should be an easy one, because it's got a couple of purposes which we actually never had these issues. We're trying to remove the big lab, which is a lab that was, you know, preventing application for simultaneously accessing the graphics card from user space, which was quite killing the performance when you start to have lots of OpenGL and stuff at the same time. It's also trying to remove the shared area. So in the old design, the kernel, the X server, and the DRI applications, the FIDI applications, they all have, they used to have a single piece of memory, which was shared. And they could write a bit there and say, hey, I'm doing this, and I'm putting this at this place. No, this was particularly useful for what we call clip rectangles, which is a major thing, because
when you actually do 3D acceleration in your X server, you basically have the 3D application handling a 2D buffer, which is an effector of the 3D rendering of your favorite game. But then, and you all know that other windows might hide, you know, might obfuscate parts of this 3D window. And if the DRI application doesn't know, it will copy and it will overwrite all the rest. So that's the major issue, and that's why DRI 2 is there, because you've all seen this Compiz demo where the cube moves, but the PLSG is stopped with the cube surface. This is really difficult for me, yeah? Yeah, well, in our case, it's very driver specific. In our case, we're not really sure. That's why I said it's still
only my
Yeah, well, actually, you can have DRI 2 and keep the locking mechanism. It's not, it's not explicitly prevented, but the new design lets you have a lockless, and lets you have a shared area that, you know, it lets you do things, but it doesn't force you.
It's really, it's the same for the shared backup, so you might keep it as well if you need them. No, the design does not prevent this, but it helps you. Actually, the old design prevented you, but this design doesn't prevent. That's the idea. It keeps flexible enough that you can do it.
So, and we don't have any of the QR already here, I assume. Because the old year I suspended from exactly like that. You are already like that.
Yes, mostly.
You sort of have already
Yeah, we don't know yet. There's just additional stuff with the swap buffer thing. We don't know yet where, which, you know, we've got three components, kernel components, user space components, and the 3D DRI component. We're not sure where the swap buffer copy should happen also. We're still evaluating possibilities, because there's a very big performance impact to doing, to doing this choice. So we're going very carefully. Kernel mode setting, everyone talks about this. Jerome is going to discuss this tomorrow, how he's doing this in Radiance. We want to do this on NVIDIA. First of all, we need to stabilize our R&R 1.2 interface in user space. Obviously, debugging stuff in user space is easy. Debugging stuff in kernel space, not so much. But then, when it is stable, we plan to move it in the kernel. Except, this involves having the BIOS parser as well inside the kernel. This is going to be a first. It might, I think it might work, actually. We'll see. So, that's one resume. This is very much a work in progress. It depends on a lot of things. This is why today it's not really happening. If you want to do proper SASPAN resume, you do it all from the kernel, which means that all user space components have to become pretty dumb about the cloud states and what they expect from the cloud. As soon as we are there, we'll be able to very easily SASPAN and resume, but for now, fully working BIOS parser would be a nice tool, because better with kernel mass is here. And then we have to save and restore. I've made experiments. Yeah. Seems to work somehow.
not
you see, yeah.
Yeah. It's very hard to do it. Yeah, it will take.
Hopefully, the moving more components inside the kernel will help a lot, because otherwise, we just. If we do not move enough stuff inside the kernel, really, the kernel can be the only entity knowing and having full access and understanding of the card. If multiple entities are involved to access the same piece of hardware, self-quantum management is becoming very quickly very complex. So, that's good. So, another question we get asked a lot about pretty much very often, we change our mind most immediately on this.
Really,
well, doing a real release and merging into mainline kernel, merging the DRM into mainline kernel would require that we stabilize our API, basically DRM, which is going to change because of kernel config. So it's also going to change because of the TTM and super IOCTR. So this is still one of the pending issues that depend on other stuff and these kind of things, much like suspended regime. We might get those two at the same time because those actually have the same requirements. So we do not, we could, of course, we could decide to stabilize on the current interface, but then we get, by the Linux policy, to maintain this interface forever. So not good. It's not really in our own interest. At the moment, we want to